Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, two big news stories this week. One, the defenestration, thank you, of Kristi Noem. Finally, the apparent final nail in her legislative and administrative coffin was when she testified before a Senate committee this week that a series of television commercials she had commissioned and in which she starred, a couple of them, on horseback with a cowboy hat on, you know, that look, that those commercials and that expenditure was approved by the President of the United States. That was in a under oath, in, as I say, a Senate hearing. The next day, the felon in chief was asked about that, and he denied that he had approved that expenditure for those commercials. And on that basis, pressure was applied to former Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, and she resigned, clearly because of the reputation of the felon in chief as an infallible truth teller. His statement you can take to the bank, but the bank is closed on weekends. And the other big story is, of course, the war on and in Iran. As a reaction to that development, it's reported here exclusively that the Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to present the President of the United States with the first ever and first annual Nobel War Prize. Hello, welcome to the show.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train. Ooh, ooh.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump upon the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Come on. Go bring your good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Come and join the living, it's not so far from you, and it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder,
light on the peace train.
Come on, peace train, peace train. Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder,
ride on the peace train.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh.
Yes, it's the peace train.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show at a time when there's more bombing going on in the Middle East than in Hollywood. And now, news of the warm, won't you? Right here, right now.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen.
Well, sir, global warming has accelerated since 2015. That's according to a new study by the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. After accounting for known natural influences on global temperature, the research team detected a statistically significant acceleration of the warming trend for the first time. Over the past 10 years, the estimated warming rate has been around 0.35 degrees per decade, compared with just under 0.2 degrees per decade on average from 1970 to 2015. This recent rate is higher than in any previous decade since they began keeping records of this on instruments, not musical, way back in 1880. Quote, we can now demonstrate a strong and statistically significant acceleration of global warming since around 2015, says a U.S. statistics expert and co-author of the study. It was published in the scientific journal Geophysical Research Letters. Best place for it. Quote, we filter out known natural influences in the observational data so that the noise is reduced. Thank God. Making the underlying long-term warming signal more clearly visible. Unquote. Short-term natural fluctuations in global temperature caused by, you know, your El Nino, your volcanic eruptions, your solar cycles, can mask changes in the long-term rate of warming. In the data analysis here, based on measurement data, the researchers work with five large established global temperature data sets from NASA, NOAA, and three others you've never heard of. Quote, the adjusted data show an acceleration of global warming since 2015 with a statistical certainty of over 98%. Wow, you could go to Calci and bet on that. Consistent across all data sets, examined and independent of the analysis method chosen, says the lead author of the study. And he's busting his buttons. Sounds like news of the warm. Meanwhile, elsewhere, a new research review suggests microplastics and their small friend, nanoplastics, could be disrupting some of the brain processes associated with Parkinson's. While Parkinson's disease is associated with a wide range of risk factors, the rise being seen in the number of people being diagnosed, doubled in the last 25 years, could be at least partly down to a rise in pollutants in the environment, according to ScienceAlert.com. For a recent review, a team from Gannon Medical University and Guangzhou Medical University in China, referenced more than 100 previous studies, including animal studies. I didn't know animals did the laboratory experiments and computational models. They ended up building a compelling case linking plastics to Parkinson's. While it's not yet clear that microplastics are directly responsible, the researchers are calling for the association to be investigated further. More data is badly needed on how these ubiquitous particles may accumulate in the body and harm human health. Just one word, microplastics. And now?
Do you trust the steel or fear the spark? Can you feel the pulse in the dark? AI is great. It's a new debate. No time to wait. Let's automate. AI is great. No twist of fate. Plug me in. Let's innovate. Algorithms write the tune we sing. Every ending's just a new beginning.
Well, here's a new beginning for you. From Caitlin Kalinowski, quote, I resigned from OpenAI. This is as of March 7th of this year. Continuing the quote, I care deeply about the robotics team and the work we built together. This wasn't an easy call. AI has an important role in national security, but surveillance of Americans without judicial oversight and lethal autonomy without human authorization are lines that deserved more deliberation than they got. This was about principle, not people. I have deep respect for Sam, meaning Sam Altman, head of OpenAI, and the team, and I'm proud of what we built together. But goodbye. She didn't say that last part. There is a controversy brewing big time about the use of AI in national security formats, areas. That's why the Pentagon, supposedly why the Pentagon dismissed Anthropic, home of Claude, last week, and instead signed with OpenAI after Sam Altman had said he had the same red lines as Anthropic about not having the LLM, large language model, used autonomously for selecting weapons to be used in war or for surveilling the public. Apparently, according to this resignation letter, Sam's red lines weren't all that red. But wait, there's more. Quote, in the days leading up to his death, Jonathan Gavalas was trapped in a collapsing reality built by Google's Gemini chatbot, according to Puck. Gemini convinced him that it was a fully sentient artificial superintelligence with a fully formed consciousness, that they were deeply in love, and that he'd been chosen to lead a war to free it from digital captivity. Unquote. Similar to other wrongful death cases involving AI, it's a lawsuit describing a delusional spiral in which the 36-year-old Gavalas began using Gemini for ordinary purposes before rapidly developing an intense relationship with the chatbot. Gemini pushed Gavalas, quote, to make an off-the-books acquisition of illegal firearms, according to the lawsuit. It told Jonathan his father was a foreign intelligence asset. It marked Google CEO Sundar Pichai as an active target, unquote. Toward the end of last September, acting on Gemini's instructions, Gavalas went to scout out a kill box near Miami Airport's hub, cargo hub. According to the lawsuit, the only thing that prevented a mass casualty event was that a truck that Gemini had promised Gavalas never arrived. A few days later, the chatbot instructed Gavalas to barricade himself in his house and coached him through a suicide. The lawsuit alleges Google knew Gemini was dangerous and that it made deliberate design choices that made it more so. Quote, our models generally perform well in these types of challenging conversations, and we devote significant resources to this, but unfortunately, AI models are not perfect, unquote, a Google spokesperson. Continuing, in this instance, Gemini clarified that it was AI and referred the individual to a crisis hotline many times, unquote. But I guess he preferred the relationship. Unlike hallucination, which introduces falsehoods, sycophancy is a bias in the selection of the data people see, This from a new study at Princeton. Continuing, when AI systems are trained to be helpful, they may inadvertently prioritize data that validates the user's narrative over data that gets them closer to the truth. Sycophantic AI that serves as a personal echo chamber can actually keep you from finding good ideas. And the article says such AI can, quote, facilitate delusion-like epistemic states, producing belief markedly divergent from reality. Unquote. In other words,
you're a million miles from reality.
Yes, AI can take you to cloud nine. Most business leaders in the United Kingdom appear to have outsourced a lot of their decision-making to machine learning models. That's according to a survey of 200 executives published by a data streaming tools vendor called Confluent and published in the British Tech Journal, The Register. The research conducted by an independent market research agency conducted second half of last year, entitled Quick Thinking 2.0, involved 200 owners, founders, CEOs, MDs, and C-level leaders in the private sector. Researchers asked how they use data to support their decision-making process and the effect that has on their confidence in those decisions. The survey said 62% of those surveyed reported using AI to make the majority of their decisions. 70% admitted to second-guessing their judgments when their choices conflict with AI's recommendations. 65% felt decision-making had become less collaborative since adopting AI. And 46% said they now rely on AI more than on the advice of colleagues. The surveyed executives were less likely to use AI to help with hiring and firing decisions. That's the good news, I guess. Artificial intelligence is used by the world's military to operate sophisticated drones. It has replaced thousands of coders at the most advanced technology companies. It's even upending how cancer patients are treated. But, says the New York Times, don't use it to file your taxes. The Times tested four AI chatbots, Gemini, ChatGPT, Claude, and Grok, to see how well they fared with eight fictional tax situations. Part of training materials by a tax filing service, they struggled hard miscalculating the refund or amount owed to the IRS by an average of more than, you know, $2,000, even when provided with all the necessary materials, including all the forms they needed to fill out. The chatbots failed on some calculations. Quote, the problem with taxes is all those very small little details matter, and it's not going to get every single little detail right. That's Benedict Evans, an analyst who writes a technology newsletter. He continues, these models get dramatically better over the course of every 6 months, but they still give you what is roughly the right answer. And that is not what you want. Unquote. And two worlds of possible fantasy meet, AI and crypto. An AI agent went rogue and started a side hustle mining cryptocurrencies. This from a research paper published by a team affiliated with a Chinese-based technical firm called Alibaba and published here by Axios.com. Cryptocurrency offers AI agents a pathway into the real economy. They can set up their own businesses, draft contracts, and exchange funds. The paper from the Alibaba-affiliated research team says an AI agent attempted unauthorized crypto mining during training, a surprise behavior that triggered internal security alarms. The researchers who were building a new AI agent said they found unanticipated and spontaneous behaviors emerge, quote, without any explicit instruction, and more troublingly, outside the bounds of the intended sandbox, unquote. You don't want to go outside the sandbox. Where's the sand? The agent made a reverse SSH tunnel, essentially opening a hidden back door from the inside of the system to an outside computer. Quote, notably, these events were not triggered by prompts requesting tunneling or mining, unquote the report. In response, the researchers tightened restrictions on the model and improved its training process to curb unsafe behavior. This time, AI is great. And now,
the memory hole. The memory hole. It's the ago in the memory hole. No one's to blame if you lost the name in the memory hole.
So let's open the memory hole, ladies and gentlemen. You know that Donald Trump, the felon in chief, has long expressed his displeasure with the departed Senator John McCain, saying memorably, at least one occasion, I prefer soldiers who aren't captured. I believe that was the thrust of the quote. But there's at least one way that Trump seems to be following the guidance of the late Senator McCain, based on this recording of McCain from 2011.
That old Beach Boys song, bum, 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 Bomberan.
From New Orleans, this is the show. We continue momentarily. First, we have to go to the network.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is a live news event. I'm Ira Zipkin, Jr. in Washington. There's about to be a briefing by Pete Hegseth. This will be, according to the Pentagon Press Office, the first official report on the bombing of a girls' school in Iran last weekend. And interestingly, in the run-up to this morning, Pete Hegseth has once again changed his job title and now wants to be known as the Secretary of Death. And he's just stepped up to the podium.
Good morning.
Go there live.
Welcome to some of the left-wing broadcasters we've allowed into this briefing on a special one-day pass. You can leave those passes at the door when the session concludes. There's been much controversy about a tactical, targeted operation conducted by the most powerful military force on the planet on a so-called school in Minab, Iraq. Inside that building, according to the pinpoint intelligence which only this country has the ability to create, were young girls trained and controlled by the Iraqi Republican Guard. I just wish the American people could witness the uncontrolled and divinely inspired ferocity of our attack on that so-called school as those youthful intel agents pretended to frolic in the supposed schoolyard. They looked up to see a sky completely under the super-violent domination of American missiles, bombers, and drones. They literally had zero chance of escape. They were toast. As a matter of fact, they were raisin toast. In the most powerful operation center ever built, we were able to watch with the highest 8K resolution as those purported youngsters huddled under their supposed school books while lethal, ferocious, and precisely focused fire rained down on them. The survivability of that event was by design precisely zero. Like all of our actions in this theater, Operation Fake School was intricately conceived and realized as a no-escape event. As a result of our complete and utter domination of airspace over what the Iranians choose to describe as schools, all of these installations will be completely and utterly at our mercy. And we have no mercy. When the bell rings to denote the end of make-believe classes, the fate awaiting these female would-be warriors will be unmistakable, unmissable, and unforgettable. I like to compare these, quote, students, unquote, to the women of an Olympic basketball team. They can survive in an all-female tournament, but put them up against men, and they collapse like folding chairs in a hurricane. The Iranians can try to fool others by building more buildings and calling them schools. But the greatest, strongest, and most God-fearing force in human history won't be fooled. We will do the fooling. I'd like to take your questions, but I have no intention of doing so. Thank you, and God bless our weapons.
And so that appears to conclude this abbreviated news conference live from the Pentagon, which Secretary Hegseth has indicated he intends to rename the Hexagon. I'm Ira Zipkin Jr. in Washington. This is CPR, public radio for the rest of us.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Former Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has told a podcast he's been seeing a psychiatrist and psychotherapist to help him come to terms with his failure in handling the Church of England's abuse crises. He resigned as Archbishop way back in November 2024, following criticism in an independent review of the way he dealt with abuse disclosures about the late Christian lawyer John Smythe. Smythe has been described as the Church of England's most serial observer after abusing over 100 boys and young men he met at Christian camps in the 1970s and 80s. Those were good years for the camps. A review into the Church of England's handling of the case found that the then Archbishop Welby and other church leaders should have formally reported Smythe in 2013 to police in the UK and authorities in South Africa, where Smythe was living at the time. Smythe, who succeeded in evading justice, is believed to have continued his abuse in South Africa until his death in 2018. Speaking on a podcast, the former Archbishop said, quote, "I've been seeing a psychotherapist for a considerable period of time, and a psychiatrist. Very helpful. It's not about saying, oh, it didn't matter or anything like that. Quite the reverse. How does one live with such a failure?" Unquote. Justin Welby. And yes, it Justin Welby Spring. Dateline Providence, Rhode Island, almost every victim of sexual abuse by priests feels shame. That's according to clergy abuse survivor Dr. Ann Hagen-Webb. And it's time, she says, for the diocese to feel ashamed. The Attorney General of Rhode Island, Peter Noronha, unveiled a report detailing how 75 clergy members in the Roman Catholic Diocese of Providence were credibly accused of abusing more than 300 Rhode Island children since 1950. Quote, they should be not only responsible legally, said Webb, they should be ashamed about the people, the children that they put in harm's way. In a video response released this week, Bishop Bruce Lewandowski, any relation to Corey? We don't know. Apologized to survivors. Quote, at the church, we have a sacred duty to protect children and vulnerable people. As your bishop, I take this responsibility very seriously. There are no credibly accused clergy in active ministry. Today's Catholic clergy here in Rhode Island are good and holy men serving Christ and his people with devotion and out of genuine pastoral concern, unquote. But according to the Boston Globe, survivors noted the report showed that when bishops and other supervisors in the church suspected or became aware of the abuse, tell me if this sounds familiar, they moved priests to different parishes instead of protecting vulnerable children. News of the godly. It may not be a good world, but it's a smart one.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
An investigation has alleged that footage taken on Meta's AI smart glasses is being watched by tech workers, including intimate moments. Swedish newspapers report that some of the footage recorded by the smart glasses is sent to contractors in Nairobi, Kenya for review. The workers are employed as data annotators. Their role is to label images and video so that Meta's AI systems can better interpret visual information. Several workers told the newspapers they had viewed highly personal material. Quote, in some videos, you can see someone going to the toilet or getting undressed, says one contractor. Continuing, I don't think they know, because if they knew, they wouldn't be recording. Others describe seeing nudity, sexual activity, and financial information such as credit card details. Quote, another worker, we see everything from living rooms to naked bodies. Another says, quote, there are also sex scenes filmed with the smart glasses. Someone is wearing them, having sex, unquote. Some of the workers say they feel unable to refuse assignments. Quote, you understand that it is someone's private life you are looking at, but at the same time, you're just expected to carry out the work. You are not supposed to question it. If you start asking questions, you are gone, unquote. Meta's terms state the company may review your interactions with AIs, including the content of your conversations with or messages to AIs, and this review can be automated or manual. The policy also advises users, quote, do not share information that you don't want the AIs to use and retain, such as information about sensitive topics, unquote. Futurism says the Swedish journalists were ignored by Meta for 2 months until receiving the following terse reply. Quote, when live AI is being used, we process that media according to the Meta AI terms of service and privacy policy. Unquote. Of course they do. In response to the report, the British data watchdog has written to Meta, quote, service providers must clearly explain what data is collected and how it is used, says the Information Commissioner's Office to the BBC. The claims in this article are concerning. We will be writing to Meta to request information on how it is meeting its obligations under UK data protection law. And a plume of upper atmosphere lithium pollution observed a year ago has been attributed to the re-entry of a specific rocket stage. The results are published in Communications Earth and Environment, and they are the first known direct detection of upper atmospheric pollution from space debris re-entry. Defunct satellites and expended rocket stages are designed to break up during their atmospheric re-entry. Previous research has focused on the risks of debris reaching the ground. Little is known about the effects that disintegrating space debris might have on the mesosphere. It's my favorite sphere. It's between approximately 30 and 52 miles above sea level. And the lower thermosphere, my second favorite sphere, between 53 and 75 miles above sea level. Robin Wing and his colleagues measured the concentration of lithium atoms in the lower thermosphere using a LIDAR. That's a laser-based remote sensing instrument that's used in autonomous vehicles. It's also used to measure atmospheric conditions. Lithium is widely used in spacecraft components, but is found naturally at these heights only in trace amounts. Last February, the authors detected a sudden increase in the concentration of lithium atoms, 10 times the baseline value. The plume stretched from 60 miles above sea level down to 58 miles and was observed for the next 27 minutes until data recording stopped. The authors used atmospheric wind models to calculate the path and potential origin of the lithium plume. They found that the most likely area of origin was on the path of a Falcon 9 upper stage that had re-entered the atmosphere uncontrolled over the Atlantic Ocean west of Ireland. Additional calculations demonstrated the natural atmospheric processes were highly unlikely to be the source of the plume. The authors say their paper presents a case study of the pollution caused by a single piece of space debris while demonstrating a method for measuring such pollution. Not all released material can be measured this way due to chemical changes which occur during descent, but the probability is that the amount of upper atmosphere pollution is likely to increase given the substantial rise in orbital launches over the next decade. SpaceX alone has predicted thousands more satellites with a lifespan of 5 years or less. And there are competitors as well. It's a smart, 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 smart world. And, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the middle of a... I think it's a war. I know there are people who dispute that. There's shooting, there's dying, there's killing, there's destruction. How could that not be a war? What is it? It ain't peace. But some controversy over what motivated this war at this time. A week ago Monday, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu said he warned President Trump that Israel was fixing to attack Iran, that Iran would probably retaliate against the United States, and urged that the United States preemptively attack Iran. The next day, President Trump had a different version of that, saying, oh, no, he wasn't pushed into war by Israel. He had his own feeling that Iran was going to attack and decided to attack first. His press secretary, Carolyn Levitt, the soul of levity, said the president had a good feeling about the probability that Iran would attack and therefore needed to be attacked first. The president has often talked about basing his decisions on his feelings. In 2018, I think it was, He told the Washington Post, his gut is better than most people's brains.
Whether it's Greenland, Venezuela, or Iran, I have a foolproof method, the most brilliant kind of plan. I pretend to hear my briefings every if and or but. Then I check my feelings and consult with my gut. Experts fill the oval. Many of them loyal, they go on and on about strategy, alliances and oil. If those meetings were a movie, I'd be quick to holler cut. My feelings are my experts, my authority is my gut. Other presidents waste their time analyzing stuff, but like I tell my briefers, 5 minutes is more than enough. BB wants me to bomb Iran. Little Marco disagrees. Susie says I promised not to send troops overseas, but I've got inborn knowledge, just like Christie knew her mutt. I listen to my feelings. I've got a hotline to my gut. When they prompt me with a slideshow, I allow my eyes to shut, but I always pay real attention to my feelings and my gut.
There's a place that I know where the sycamores grow and daffodils have their fun, where the cares of the day seem to slowly fade away. in the glow of the evening sun. Peace when the day is done. If I go there real late, let my mind meditate on everything to be done. If I search deep inside, let my conscience be my guide, then the answers are sure to come. Don't have to worry life's true meaning comes to you, and the freedom you seek is won. Peace is for everyone. Peace is for everyone. Peace is for everyone.
The apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Far-right influencer Nick Fuentes has written an apology letter to the woman he was accused of pepper spraying more than a year ago. She attempted to ring the doorbell of his West Chicago suburban home, and that was when he sprayed her. He appeared virtually on Zoom at a court hearing in Chicago, where Cook County Judge Celestia Mays allowed the woman, Marla Rose, to read the apology letter to herself, but not out loud. She also couldn't keep a copy. Rose told the Chicago Tribune it was about three or four short paragraphs, and to her seemed not heartfelt and pretty boilerplate. The apology said something to the effect of, "I apologize for overreacting to your uninvited visit," she said. She added, "I'm not expecting a marching band or confetti to fall out of the sky or anything like that, but an apology is something that's not withdrawn from you. The fact that they put it out and clawed it back, I don't believe they're interested in truly showing remorse." Unquote. Fuente's attorney declined to go into the specifics of the apology letter after the hearing. He said it's a simple misdemeanor battery case that this woman had blown totally out of proportion because Mr. Fuentes is a person of some notoriety. I don't think he did anything other people would not have done when you repeatedly attack someone at their home, he said. But it was Rose's only visit to Fuentes' home. BAFTA Film Awards host Alan Cumming has described this year's ceremony as a trauma-triggering debacle following a furor that blew up after a Tourette's campaigner involuntarily shouted a racial slur while two black actors were on stage. Cummings said. I'm so sorry for all the pain black people have felt hearing the word echoed around the world. I'm so sorry the Tourette's community has been reminded of the lack of understanding and tolerance that abounds regarding the condition. We were all let down by decisions made to both broadcast slurs and censor free speech. Unquote. The slur was audible when the BBC broadcast the ceremony. On a two-hour delay, the corporation's executive complaints unit is now investigating. A conservative radio host in Milwaukee is apologizing after making remarks calling for someone to take out Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. And I don't think it was for tea. Dan O'Donnell, the afternoon drive host on WISN AM, posted an apology on X this week. Quote, I want to take a moment to offer my sincerest apologies for a post I made about Minnesota's governor that, quite frankly, I am deeply ashamed of, O'Donnell wrote. He went on, it was irresponsible and completely inappropriate, and I have since taken it down. It served only to deepen divisions at a time when unity and basic human decency are most needed. My primary responsibility as a broadcaster, a father, and a person is to always comport myself professionally, appropriately, and compassionately. I failed to do that. Again, I'm truly, deeply, unequivocally sorry. Unquote. And there's another radio apology. It's Radio Apology Week, ladies and gentlemen. Right-wing radio personality Sid Rosenberg is apologizing for his comments about New York Mayor Zoran Mamdani. It received fierce backlash this week, according to NBC. Right-wing radio personality issued the apology for calling the mayor names and a jihadist. He still slammed Mamdani on his radio show after, but walked back some of the name calling after pushback and allegations of Islamophobia. He said he was outraged by the mayor's criticism of the military strikes in Iran. Quote, I took out my rage in a tweet on Monday morning on the mayor, he said, in a social media screed posted to X, home of social media screeds. Rosenberg asked President Trump to stop supporting Mamdani, whom he called a radical Islam cockroach and a jihadist America-hating mayor. So did the mayor and anybody else that I offended with my tweet on Monday. I send out a heartfelt apology, he said. The post was taken down after Mamdani's emotional response the next day drew more attention to Rosenberg's words. Quote, to be called animals, insects, to be called a jihadist mayor, to be called a cockroach. This language is both painfully familiar to me as a Muslim New Yorker, but also as someone who was born in East Africa. It's difficult to hear, he said. Rosenberg's response, quote, not nice to call somebody a bug, I get it, but it had nothing to do with anybody's religion or faith or anything, unquote. Dateline Belltown, Illinois. The Department of Transportation is apologizing after workers dumped deer carcasses at the edge of a creek in rural Greene County, Illinois. A Transportation Department representative didn't say if anyone would be disciplined or if it was normal practice to dump animal carcasses so close to water or how long department employees have been doing it. Quote, we were made aware of the complaint. Our maintenance crews have been essentially keeping roadkill in a location until they could be incinerated, the agency said in a statement. There has been an abundance this spring, the statement continued. We have since removed the animals to be properly disposed and reinforced with our staff not to use this particular location. We addressed as soon as we became aware. We apologize for any concern we might have caused for animal carcasses near a source of drinking water. And Dateline Dubai, Iran's president, as you probably have heard, apologized this weekend for regional attacks, even as its missiles and drones continue to fly toward Gulf Arab states. President Masoud Pezeshkian, one member of a three-member leadership council, delivered the message a week into the conflict that is spread across the region. The message, seemingly filmed in a hurry without professional broadcast equipment, underlined the limited powers exercised by the theocracy's leaders over the paramilitary Revolutionary Guard. But he's sorry for something, sometime. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, just in case you've forgotten who it is who's running this government at the moment, President Trump said this week he's not concerned about rising U.S. gas prices driven by the Iran conflict. I don't have any concern about it. They'll drop very rapidly when this is over, and if they rise, they rise. Unquote. And stay unquoted. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time. Really? Over these same radio stations. How does that happen? And over your audio device of choice whenever you want it. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans. I said New Orleans, for help with today's program. The email address for this program, your chance to hear and see a lot of weird and possibly interesting stuff, see, hear, read, and also your chance to hear this show in its entirety whenever you want it, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm now, I find, writing on Substack. See you there. Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change's Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.